Welcome to the Lighter Side of the Dark Side. It's your weekly freak show here on RenegadeRadio.com. It's the Dark Mark Show. I am Dark Mark, the goth comedian. Across from me, she's Bach.
I'm the co-host, Hannah Bach. I am the Robin to Mark's Batman.
Oh, is that the thing?
That's what popped in my head today.
Okay, because yeah, 4 months we don't like have a thing. Like, our other co-host said, you're the Robin to my Batman. Okay. Mm-hmm. I thought you were like, we are the Ruby, aren't? Shouldn't you be Batman?
I'm currently
Batgirl,
your sidekick. I'm learning. You know, I'm still a baby.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, it's a very special Dark Mark show tonight.
It is.
We have two of my favorite people, two of my heroes.
No.
A lot of San Diego talk tonight. You remember when we had the first show here at the Ruby, then the Nerdist School Studios?
Mm-hmm.
We had Josie Cat. Nicole Six, my former co-host, were on.
Yes.
And I asked who the top guests, their favorite guests were.
Mm-hmm.
And they mentioned, and we've had all of them on except one.
Yeah.
And now we have that one.
Josie mentioned
Bree Walker. And Nicole agreed wholeheartedly. Walker is here. Anchorwoman, actress, activist. She's been out of the limelight for a while, but she's coming back, and we're going to talk about it.
Speaking of back is here. Nice to meet you, Hannah.
Nice to meet you, too.
And Ryan.
And somebody who's starstruck meeting Bree Walker for the first time is my friend and fellow comedian, the nicest man in comedy, which damns you with faint praise because most comedians are fucking assholes.
Mm-hmm.
But I love this guy, and there's going to be a lot of San Diego talk because he's from San Diego. A lot of interesting talk. He's gone from a really metal look, like a Rob Zombie sort of look.
He was zombie-ish,
to more of a Pantera look.
Yes, it's very Pantera, actually.
But Ryan Talamo is here.
Yes, I am glad to be here.
The co-host of I'm Burger podcast as
well. Yeah, we're on a hiatus right now, but yeah. I am a co-host of that
something's
show.
Something's happened with Burger. I don't even know what's going on. But
he's got some stuff going on, so he's taking care of that. So, and I got my own stuff going on, but I'm just trying to move in my corner and do my thing.
Right. So before we get started, sponsors real quick. Audible. I like audiobooks.
I love Audible.
You guys, you got a lot of stuff. You know, you got a lot of time on your hands. Listen to a book.
Yeah.
I think it'd be a lot easier right now for me, too. Yeah.
Are you subscribed?
I think I am, actually.
If you're not.
Yeah, maybe. I'm probably not. I don't know. My brother has one.
Forever.
So.
Well,
yeah.
If you're not, go to audibletrial.com/DMS. D for the Dark Mark Show. DMS. And you get a free book and a free 30-day trial.
Hmm.
That's awesome.
It's Audible, yes.
You can consume a lot of books in 30
whatever
days.
Book you want. I know they have all sorts of books about news. Bill Clinton just wrote a novel that's on there. Hillary Clinton. There's all sorts of Trump books. If you're into politics, I'm sick of politics. So if you want to read a horror novel, anything you want, Keith Richards' book. It's 10 hours of Johnny Depp reading it as Keith Richards.
Oh,
really?
That sounds hot.
Yeah, and that's free. Go to audibletrial.com/DMS. They have Tiffany Haddish's autobiography, whatever you want, comedy albums, Carlin Classic Gold. When they had record stores, I paid $25 for this.
Yeah.
On Audible, if you go to audibletrial.com/DMS, that's free.
It's free.
I just finished Rob Lowe's book on audible.com.
Really?
Rob Lowe has a book?
It was awesome.
Did he talk?
Were you in it?
I wish. I wish I'd been in it and under it.
And I bet you do. No, this is the Brie we're going to get. This is not the Anchor Bob Brie. And Hannah?
Yes.
Tell us about our other sponsor.
We have Lionel Monroe Hat Company. It's my girlfriend, Jamie. She's a hat maker. She makes them from scratch. So go ahead and follow her on Instagram at Lionel Monroe Hat Company. Send her a message. Order a hat. Her little dachshund is a spokesperson.
Ah, oh, that's so cute.
And they're beautiful. They're high quality.
The Marilyn Monroe Hat Company?
Lionel Monroe. Yeah.
But I bet they have some Marilyn
hats. Loves Marilyn Monroe. She makes some pretty
we
hats.
We all do, don't we?
Is it Monroe? Is that how we say her name?
Monroe?
Okay, making sure. My old roommate, she was a big Monroe fan. We say she had all the stuff in the apartment. So it was kind of weird. So when I bring friends over, it was all Marilyn Monroe stuff and memorabilia all around the apartment.
Did she have Lionel Richie stuff? Or?
No, no. Oh, no Lionel Richie, just Marilyn Monroe.
Yeah,
so Lionel Monroe Hat Company. I don't know where to start. So we got so many fascinating guests. Bree Walker, your grandfather is enamored. When first I said Bree Walker's coming on the show.
And I had such a busy week. I wasn't putting two and two together. And then I sat down and I was like, whoa, I saw the picture I was tagged in. I go, Grandpa, do you know? He's like, yeah. He's like, that's a big deal. So he's so excited to listen to the show.
Hey, Gramps, thank you. You're hot.
Now, do you get this a lot?
Well, I'm always flattered when it's a grandparent.
I'll bet.
Because I just recently became a grandparent myself, and I understand that that's about as good as it gets. So,
really?
You know, it happens to me more often than I would think it would, since I've been out of the limelight for a long time.
Right.
It's always nice to be remembered that way.
We're in L.A., so he caught you in the L.A. years.
Yes.
When you were the basis for Anchorman, the movie, and you and your ex-husband Lamps, Jim Lampley.
Yes.
Were flirting on air. I was perusing an L.A. Times article about that today.
Yes.
Your flirting was so outrageous on the air.
Oh, that's what everybody told us. In fact, it was a scandal.
That was...
Because we were both just recently, you know.
Okay.
We were in divorces, each of us, both of us.
Yeah.
And so it was a scandal. And I think CBS secretly liked it, but they certainly tried to use it against us during that period of time.
But did they tell you to, did they egg you on?
They said, you know, once they figured out that we were playing hanky-panky under the desk,
How hanky was the panky?
Oh, it got hot, yeah.
Really?
Well, you know, you only see
like
us from the waist
action,
up, and, you know, the equipment that you need to play hanky-panky is from the waist down. So, I mean, I never actually got on my knees or anything, but...
That's the Bree Walker I know.
Certainly thought about it. And we had offices upstairs, so, you know, whatever. Well, I guess we were
Dan
flirting.
Dan Quayle, and you were, like, shifting into third?
We had chemistry, you know?
I guess.
Yeah.
No, we have chemistry.
So CBS executives marched us to the front office and said, you better either split up and make it official and leave each other alone or get married. And so we got married.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
And you met my son today.
I met your son. He's a very good-looking guy. He looks like
him.
Lampley.
Yeah, he looks like me.
He looks like
Bree.
He doesn't look like Lampley, but with a big
Thank
beard.
Thank you. Lucky boy.
Yes. But I was going to say, this transitions to what I was going to talk to you about.
And Jim's still busy on HBO, doing boxing.
Jim's a great announcer.
Yeah, he is. He's the best. He's the best boxing announcer there is.
And that's all I'll say about him. But no, because you were on a past show, and you had said this is one you called in, and you had said that you actually Don Hewitt had contacted you possibly on Beyond 60 Minutes.
Yes.
And you got pregnant.
Yes.
So Jim Lampley literally fucked you out of being on 60 Minutes.
I love that. Oh, that's so good. I'm gonna have to make sure that we put that in. In some kind of comment, yeah, that's true. He did.
Yeah,
he really did.
Right.
Yeah, and you know, Don Hewitt was not exactly a feminist kind of guy,
really,
because he did not really appreciate women being mothers and broadcasters. Yeah,
right.
he's old school.
It's not
God rest his soul.
It's Don Hewitt's short-sightedness, obviously.
Yeah, he was an old school kind of guy. Yeah.
Now you were in the old school God newsrooms, and because of all that's been happening. Matt Lauer, Charlie Rose, Tom Brokaw.
Yeah.
You work with all these people.
Oh, yes, I sure did. And, you know, it surprised me about Matt because Matt was a complete gentleman with me when we would share the route on the Amtrak from Washington, D.C. back to New York. We were on competing TV stations, but he was always a total gentleman with me. But, you know, I think that money and fame does change a person.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly that kind of power over years and that kind of money, I guess your equipment grows larger.
Well, there you go. But do you think that was because you were a peer?
Pardon?
Do you think it was because you were a peer and maybe he's going after women that are beneath him and that you're going to take advantage of?
That's probably a good assessment, Mark, really. Yeah, when you think about it, because there would have been no reason for him to, play footsie with me.
Well, actually, at the time, you were a bigger star than he was.
At the time?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you were actually above him in the
hierarchy. Yeah, that when I was at WCBS in New York. Yeah, and he was just starting out. Yes.
Right, mm-hmm. right. And Tom Brokaw, no hanky panky with him.
What did Brokaw do?
No, Brokaw's totally.
No, Brokaw, they had a thing. Somebody accused him of.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
It just seems like it is a witch hunt, though. It feels like a witch hunt. Yes, it's true that in the Me Too movement, we should all be able to say out loud what's happened to us and what trauma it may have, done to us.
Mm-hmm.
But resilience being what it is, resilience only comes from trauma. Right. Actually, you only gain resilience from trauma. Not that I would ever endorse, behavior like that.
Yeah.
Did you see it?
Certainly kind of have to put it in perspective. During my years as a professional broadcaster, I wasn't aware of that kind of stuff happening. But I came out of rock and roll radio, so maybe my standards are actually lower than the average professional broadcaster on television.
Well. Matt Lauer.
Anything goes in rock and roll radio.
Yes.
But yeah, Matt, it's sad though, because today I saw on the news that apparently Matt's wife finally kicked him out.
Yeah.
So where does he go? New Zealand? I mean, I know he's got a house there too.
I think he'll be okay.
Yeah, he'll be okay. But money doesn't make you happy.
No, I mean, he'll be okay financially. He can find another apartment. Like if Ryan Hanna or I got kicked out, it's going to be hard to get the credit check approved. But yeah.
Keep your cars.
But Tom Brokaw and Matt Lauer, notwithstanding, Charlie Rose is skeeve, right? He's kind of.
Charlie's mannerisms with me were always just. I didn't feel like he was being lecherous.
But
he was respectful with me, actually.
But you said he's an intimidating guy.
Pardon?
He was intimidating.
I felt intimidated only because I think of him as so brilliant.
Yeah.
Brilliant interviewer, brilliant guy, but apparently with big brains comes all the other big stuff.
I don't know.
Some of which I didn't get a chance to see.
So you never went to his hotel room and he was there with his bathrobe ajar?
No, none of that. No, I missed out, I guess.
Way to set up a scene.
But
I don't mean to make light of Me Too, by the way.
I wanted to get that out there because, it's you were in the broadcast profession and that it really is... With the movie, after the movie studios got torn, Weinstein and all that, and you worked in the movies as well.
Yes.
And peripherally, you weren't. Harvey Weinstein never.
No, I was always one of those cameo players. I have a physical difference that sets me apart from, say, your average starlet. I don't have all perfect equipment.
Mm-hmm.
Mine is a little bit odd.
It's perfect to some people.
Thank you. If you like oddities, yeah. Well, and I was like I had a lovely role in Carnival mm-hmm. where I got to play a key role, and I had wonderful interactions with. Guest star directors who would come in and direct episodes of Carnival mm-hmm. for HBO. Right. It was a great series, a lot of fun. Those were all directors that I never saw any ill behavior from. So maybe I either had blinders on or because I was a working mom for so many of my years in broadcasting that I just wasn't aware of it. I never had to... climb the ladder that way.
Mm-hmm.
So I was lucky. Maybe I just didn't hit it at the right time. I don't know. I mean, the more money you give people, the more license I think you give them
right.
to mm-hmm. be badly behaved or
true.
Be well behaved. It can go either way. We're human.
Well, there's the old adage that money just enhances what you are. You're a good person, you're still a good person. If you're a bad person, you're going to be that much more a bad person.
Yes, and you can use your money for good or for evil. That's always a choice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I didn't introduce you correctly for the millennials listening. This is Bree Walker, the number one news anchor in San Diego,
number one,
Los Angeles, and New York, and probably the most famous person with Ectrodactyly.
I think if you Google Ectrodactyly, my face pops up, although it's my hands and feet that are affected. I don't know. Maybe I have Ectrodactyly face, too. I don't know.
Hardly.
Beautiful face.
You know, it's about 1 in 90,000 people are affected with some kind of Ectrodactyly, and every once in a while I'll run into somebody who has something, a missing limb or Ectrodactyly, and it looks different almost every time it manifests. Mm-hmm. So it's always very fulfilling when I run into somebody like that or right. they – seek me out, write letters to me, and I always answer those letters. So that was always a wonderful part of my career, an unexpected part of my career, when I left the microphone where you couldn't see me in radio and then was on the microphone on TV. Mm-hmm. That's right. When people started to see the difference.
As with every other 14-year-old, myself included, this gentleman to my left had a big crush on you.
Yeah. Oh, you were yay, in San Diego. Yay.
Grew up watching you.
You.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Oh, I'll blush.
It's very nostalgic, but I like nostalgia at the same time. I don't like anything that's more modern, I guess. Yeah. So it's like it's a nice like blast from the past kind of thing. It's really
Ryan,
cool.
That's so cool.
So
and you were coming of age at 14.
When I was 14, I was coming of age. Yeah.
And you were watching Bree Walker.
I was watching Bree Walker. Things were a little different going through my body. So
yes. It's like, wait a second. Thinking of, when I watched Tom Brokaw, I watched Bree Walker. It's two
in
different
your puberty. Pardon, Mark. I didn't mean to talk over
you
there.
No. I was saying when I at 14, when I was watching Tom Brokaw and watching you, it was two different sensations.
Oh, thank goodness.
And Ryan got a booty call. But
yeah, I don't know what that was about.
Ryan, I was actually San Diego factors into this because the first time, this is the nicest man in comedy, which comedy's full of a bunch of asses. But the first time I met Ryan, or I recall meeting Ryan, we drove to San Diego to do the Madhouse.
Oh, yeah.
Madhouse is a great club. Horton Plaza.
Horton Plaza in downtown.
Oh, yeah.
Horton Plaza ain't what it used to be.
I bet not.
I remember when Horton Plaza was new and shiny.
Brand spanking new, beautiful.
The first year they opened up.
1985.
At Channel 10. Yeah. We were out, Carol LeBeau, Michael Tuck, Adrian Alpert. These are all names that, we
some
might remember from San Diego. Margaret Radford. We were all there doing the Christmas at Horton Plaza, first Christmas at Horton Plaza, which was a spectacular deal. I guess it is all different.
It's less than spectacular.
It just got sold, actually, yesterday. The mall did.
Really?
Yeah, Westfield Jump Ship.
It's going to be a Westfield. Oh.
No, Westfield Jump Ship. They owned it, and they sold it. So they sold it to some developers. So the rumor is it could be torn down.
What?
So that's the rumor. But
well, I hope they don't tear down the Madhouse because that's a great club. But we drove down in your car.
Oh, yeah, when I had a car.
And after the show, Ryan was wearing a Ghostbusters T-shirt. Because Ghostbusters is his favorite movie.
One of my favorite movies, yeah. The original, yeah.
So much so that even when the remake came out, initially you said it was good.
It was good. Yeah. I had high hopes.
Hopes. And you saw it. You're like,
it was
I liked
good.
It.
I liked it. I did.
And now?
I watched it again. It doesn't stick.
Kate McKinnon's still good, but. Yeah.
Kate McKinnon's it's good. She's good in it, but it just doesn't stick. It just doesn't have the same. I guess, again, nostalgia. So I kind of like that, how the 84 film just. Totally tells like a shoestring budget, and they try to put it together. And the
really?
Studio,
I thought that was a big budget for the time.
Not too big at the time because they still had like miniatures and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, but that was the technology at the time.
Yeah, but it was still very campy. They didn't know where to go with it, and the studio didn't know if it's going to be a hit. Like they were kind of afraid before they were testing it to the audience because it was a project that Dan Aykroyd wanted to do for a long time. Right. Blah blah blah.
But he was bankable. They're old.
Yeah,
they're bankable, but the original people they wanted. They couldn't get Belushi, Eddie Murphy.
Right.
So, that's just one of my. That and Beetlejuice, surprisingly, are the two favorite movies as a kid. Yeah. So,
which is weird because I got to be honest, both those movies, they really rely on one performance.
Yeah, they do.
You take Bill Murray away from Ghostbusters, you take Michael Keaton away from Beetlejuice.
It's not the same.
They're not that funny. They're not funny at all.
Yeah.
And you could tell if they both improvised.
Oh, yeah, totally. I mean,
especially Murray.
Oh, Murray and Keaton, actually. Yeah. If you look at Keaton's movements on Beetlejuice, of everything he does and how he touches Gina Davis and Alec Baldwin,
right.
That's all improvised. And you can totally look at both actors and how uncomfortable they are with Keaton, because Keaton was just off the rails the entire time. So, but yes, Ghostbusters. I took my shirt off for that girl.
you gave your shirt
to a
girl in San Diego.
I did.
Did you get laid?
No.
He wasn't even looking for that.
No, I didn't.
He just was.
She wanted my shirt, and I gave it to her.
And we're all sitting there.
Oh,
like,
you are a nice guy.
You
didn't
you
even
doing?
Ask for anything.
It was a chilly night too.
No, you were freezing the rest of the night. Like, why'd you give your shirt? And then we drive back, and you had like some raggedy car at the time. No offense.
Yeah, it was raggedy.
It's
gone.
And we're driving back, and it's like 2-3 in the morning. Now I have to work the next day. I would love nothing better than take a nap. But the other two guys are like, snoring. So yeah. I stay up because I know you were tired.
I was exhausted.
And I wanted to make sure, and we just yammered on about pop culture.
Always back to the valley.
Otherwise, you would have fallen asleep and we would have died.
Yeah.
So.
Don't do those drives anymore. So,
yeah.
Thank God.
But this man has hosted shows at Liquid Zoo, all around the Valley. They call him Valley Jesus.
Mm-hmm. Well, the reason why is because at the time I had very, very long hair coming down to here, and I grew out my beard. So there's another comic that actually, he kept calling me the Geico caveman in the very beginning.
And I got how flattering.
I was very annoyed by that because I've been called that since like high school. And,
really?
Yeah. It's my brow. So my brow kind of gives that Cro-Magnon look, I guess. And but then
okay, I see
yeah,
it now.
You see it? Yeah, it's very it's caveman-esque. And same guys, the same comic. He just mixed it up one night and just called me Valley Jesus. And then it just stuck. And then all the comics call me that. So that's my nickname, that or Talmo. Not many people call me Ryan, so anyone that calls me Ryan is in my family pretty much. But everyone calls me Talmo or Valley Jesus. And even though this is all gone, they still call me Valley Jesus. So,
or the man that brought back PBR.
I brought back PBR because that was a very cheap beer, and I was very, very broke at the time. And I couldn't afford any other kind of alcohol. And now PBR is like $7 a can.
So. Did you remember like when the hipsters took over the PBR?
Wait, I'm sorry?
Do you remember when the hipsters took over the PBR?
Yeah, it was very bummed. I remember I can get like a 12-pack at Rite Aid for like $5.99. And I remember that because I was like in college and we used to get a bunch of them. And it was just cheap and nobody wanted to drink them. And now everyone wants to drink them. And
well, why PBR? Why not like Meisterbrau or Lucky Lager or some other cheap beer?
Because you don't find those anywhere.
Or Milwaukee.
Milwaukee's that's best. That's from where I come from.
Yeah. Milwaukee's best?
That's called bitter beer. Minnesota.
I haven't had a beer in like 7 years, but
I've
drinking bread. I don't like it.
It's depending. I used to drink a lot of IPAs, I guess, in college, and then I just started drinking the lighter beers, and that was like PBR because I used to host shows where I would just cram down 17 beers in like 4 hours, and to me PBR is just like water.
It is. It's bunny piss.
Yeah, it's just it's like one step above Coors Light.
Coors Light's the worst.
So, that's to me. So, it's easy for me to drink. And I don't feel too drunk. I'm still drunk at the time. But now, like, we were talking about that. Like, I'm going to get off of chemo in October. I'm going to probably have a huge bender right after and my bender will probably be, like, two beers, and I'll probably be knocked out.
So. Oh, yeah, you would be after not doing it. And congratulations on being a survivor.
Well, as of now.
Well, you brought it up, so I was going to save this, but...
Oh, okay, sorry.
You're more like Valley Buddha now because instead of Valley Jesus.
Because all my hair's falling out.
Because you have cancer.
I have cancer now,
but you're beating it.
I'm beating it. It's crazy. I did not expect this at all. It kind of
Who would?
Who would? Yeah, for my age too. I mean, I'm 35, so thank God. I guess if I got this later in my life, it'd been a different story. But it was just apparently it's been brewing in me for 8 months, and I was in kind of denial of what it was, and I think any human being would be because this is the last thing they want. And I was thinking of it as anything else. So I friends saw it, and they're like, "Oh, you eat too much gluten. You got to cut the gluten out." Oh, so
yeah. Everybody's got an answer, right?
And that's not the case. And then
your hair got really long, and the cancer's on your neck. Were you intentionally trying to cover it up?
Yes.
Was that because you were in denial, or because
I was in denial? Mm-hmm. People were getting worried, and my family when I came home for Christmas. They got worried.
Is that what prompted you to finally have it checked out?
That, and then it was coming around April. And then my mom saw me she came up here for Easter, and we hung out for lunch. And I was basically being, like, doing this, like, just hiding my hair as much as I can and wearing a hoodie sweatshirt on a warm day just to hide the lump in my neck. And she's like, you got to go to the hospital. And then I first thing I went to was the urgent care by my house. And then usually those guys will give you like a synopsis, like, okay, here you go. This is what you need to do. This guy was actually like worried about me. And he told me to go to the hospital right away. And usually your urgent care doctors don't give a shit about you.
No.
So
they want to get you out of there as fast as possible,
yeah,
usually.
Yeah, because they want to get to the next guy. Mm-hmm. So one thing after the other, and God bless all of you hospital. It took a span of 3 weeks and a bunch of biopsies and staying at the hospital and whatnot, but they figured it out, and then I jumped on chemo like less than a week. So, which I know a lot of hospitals don't do that. So they kind of keep their patients there for like a month or 2 months trying to figure out when to do stuff, how to do it. So it was like they gave me the diagnosis. So I have lymphoma, non-Hodgkin's, stage 3, or however you want to put it. And then literally like 3 days later, they put a PICC line in me. And then 2 days after that, I was on my first treatment. So
God bless you, Ryan Talmo, ladies and gentlemen. Survivor. Wow.
But the treatment is going amazingly well. I had a projection.
Surprisingly well, yeah. After the second treatment, like I literally had like a second head coming out of my neck. And
which is good for comedy, but
it was
not
great
for real life.
Yeah, like I had someone to talk to. And
you ever see that movie with Rosie Grier where they had the head to
twins? Yes.
I think
that's exactly
a total
the picture that came to mind.
No, there's a movie that's like this the man with two heads.
Oh, yeah.
That's right.
This racist guy, and then he's such an asshole that they're like, we're going to get him. So they put a black guy's head on his body. So him and they had like this weird neck thing. So him and Rosie Grier was a football player in the 70s. Are like yelling at each other, like, yo, honky, and all this stuff. It's a great movie.
I remember it. It's
I don't have a conversation with my lump like that, but
my lump.
Lump. It was pretty big, but the doctor, after the second treatment, I come in every other week. They change out my PICC line, so they flush. I don't know if you guys know what PICC line is, but it's basically there's two tubes coming in my arm, and then that's how they get the chemo into my body, but I have a pipe going through my veins into my heart, which is really fun. And I get to flush that out every other week. And I came there to flush it out, and my doctor was there, and he hasn't seen me since the first treatment. And he noticed that my neck shrunk like just 100 times. Like, it just went down. And he was shocked.
After how many?
Like, it just, I'm saying hundreds of times. I don't even know. But
it was after the second treatment.
After the second treatment.
Wow.
I'm sorry. It just shrunk. Like, he had, like, he was just blown away. And then he felt my neck as it spread to my chest, to my armpits, to my spleen, and my groin. And so he checked, you know, just by my hands of everywhere else. And he noticed that, like, my armpit had a big lump, and that disappeared. And he was just shocked. So if things go well after I have treatment 4 coming up right here, and then I have an appointment coming at the end of the month, they will drop one of the medications. So right now I have 4 things going in, about 4 IVs going into my body. They will take out one of them, so it will be less crappy, I guess.
God bless you.
Well, I have a theory why it's going so well. It's because of your positive attitude.
Yeah, because you're one of the nice guys.
Yeah,
you deserve to be sticking
around.
But
there's a lot of psychosomatic things to it.
Totally. It's mind over matter. It really is. If you take yourself, there's so many people that don't know how, like, this is honestly like a weird feeling, especially for being a comic. My brain is functioning differently. It's like the little things for a normal working person, you know, they're going to feel kind of icky and tired and kind of nauseous. Your taste buds are off. That's like things I can live with, I guess. Like, you know,
comics, we live with that every day.
Yeah. But there's things like my brain twitches. So there's chemo brain where you forget, like your memory is gone. So I will go, like on stage, I'll go on tangents a lot with my material, and then like on Monday night, I actually forgot what I was talking about like 20 seconds in,
right.
And I had to.
That's
like,
terrifying.
It's,
isn't it?
It's awful. And so, and that's at home too. So I'm on the phone with my family, I'm having a conversation with them, I forget what I'm talking about in 30 seconds. Like, where am I going with this conversation? There's a reason why I brought up this. I don't know how I got here.
Well, they're pumping poison into every cell in your body.
Yeah.
And the brain with that membrane is so receptive to all the chemicals.
Yeah, it's just being all rewired. So, like, Saturday, I was just triggered into, like, just depression on Saturday. I was like, I couldn't do a show. I was doing a new show that night, but I just did not feel right in the head. Everything was rewired. But then, you know, Sunday rolled by, and I felt great. I'm like a pregnant woman, I feel like. I just, like, everything is, like, I have, like, my taste buds are off. I'm nauseous. I got achy back, you know, all that kind of stuff. So I'm just.
Maybe you are pregnant.
Maybe I am.
That would be amazing. See, then you really have a stand-up routine.
I'm just doing doing some edibles, which I had a bad trip on that yesterday, so that was great.
Edibles can really wreak havoc sometimes.
Edibles, yeah. I had a little bit, but I didn't have a bad trip. I had a bad trip last night because I had the espresso beans with
chocolate covered coffee. Yeah, I had a bad trip on those.
Oh my God, they messed me up. I only had two beans too, just two of them, and they just
knocked me out. I've heard this from just about everybody who's done edibles after smoking a lot of pot for years. And then the edibles, which we're probably all trying these days, can really hit you one way or another and differently each time you try an edible. Mm-hmm. So I would suppose that it's like anything that we ingest. It's going through everything in our, you know, gastronomical
right.
senses.
Yeah.
So. Whereas the smoking of it, in and out of your lungs pretty fast. I don't really know why it is that edibles seem
to
have.
It just hits you differently, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't smoke pot, you know, because I don't need marijuana to get the munchies, but that's just me. don't make a cappuccino out of those coffee beans.
Oh no!
So mind over matter, maybe you know.
I think it's resilience.
Yeah, get a positive attitude, you might be able to cure that extradactyly of yours, Brie. Who knows?
Yeah, you know, it's resilience. I mean, you don't have resilience until you have hardship, and hardship is what trains your resilience muscle. So I think that's really the 21st century message
right.
is. We have to be resilient. How are we even going to survive when it's all artificial intelligence and we're not needed anymore? So if we don't have human resilience and compassion, then we might as well just be AI. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, it's the human compassion is going. Human resilience is going. Social networks, social media has taken it away.
Suicide rates are proving it.
Yeah. I mean, you know, look what happened this week or last week. And, I mean, you know, it's... I wasn't going to get too political, but you know, our current regime.
Oh God.
Well, I mean,
don't get me started.
I don't want to get you started.
I'm happy
I
to
really
say.
Don't, but it's so bad that people are nostalgic for the days of. Well, I don't. He's not a buffoon, in my opinion. He's an
then
asshole.
Just plain evil.
I don't think he's evil. I think he's an asshole. I think that's, and I think his supporters will even agree with that. And. You know, I
he's proud of it. You can tell.
Oh, he's absolutely proud of it. He's like, I'm an asshole. He's an asshole. He's a bully. And, you know, he had a good week this week.
Sort of. We don't think anything really came out of the Kim Jong-un
summit. But you got to give him credit for actually
getting on a plane and going. But did you notice that Kim Jong-un
even
looked at him like,
say,
I can't
believe
this guy is saying that. Trump is telling the photographer, you know, make sure we all look handsome and lean and beautiful, perfect.
Mm-hmm.
And Kim Jong-un is looking at him like, what?
That's because he's an asshole. And,
yes!
And those are two of the ugliest people on the face of the earth.
They
Let's
really
be honest.
Are.
Huh?
They are.
Those
trust
are?
Me, I'm number three, so I know. They're one and two.
I have a great Trump story.
Let's hear this.
Yeah,
I was at a boxing match, and it was a big deal boxing match in Las Vegas. And my then husband Jim Lampley, who's still a HBO boxing announcer, and you know the best there ever was, the best there is.
Yeah.
He had tickets for Jack Nicholson. And Jack was kind enough, graceful enough, and a wonderful man. Escorted me to the boxing match. And there was an empty seat next to me on the other side. It was Jack, me, empty seat. Who comes up to fill the empty seat? Donald Trump.
Wait. Back up. Jack, you knew Jack Nicholson.
That's awesome.
And
he's awesome.
And
I would so do him
Jack
in a New York minute even now.
Agreed.
Right here on this table.
When did you first met him on this table? Where did you first see Jack Nicholson? I haven't heard this one.
Well, when Jim and I were anchoring the news at Channel 2, we were lucky enough to meet a lot of A-list celebrities. We certainly were not A-listers, but we got to meet a bunch, and Jack was among them.
So Jack escorted you down to...
Very graceful man. Very tasteful guy. And so he was kind enough to escort me from the hotel room that Jim and I were staying in. And he, you know, he made, literally, because the crowds just deluge him, you know.
Right.
And he has this graceful, elegant way of separating the crowd. And he took my arm and he held it tightly in his elbow, as a real gentleman would, and just said, follow me. And I just got behind him, and he basically parted the crowds and smiled at everybody and got us through to our seats. And then a few minutes later, Donald Trump sits down and reaches out. Donald reaches over me to shake Jack's hand. Jack shakes his hand as he's an elegant, graceful guy. And then he reaches his hand to shake my hand, takes my hand, looks at it, pulls his hand back, yanks his hand back because he's skeeved by my hands, oh, right? What a tool. This guy's such a tool, yeah? I mean,
big tool.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So you,
and I am and he not goes skeeved like, at all by this.
And he goes like this. And then he even went like that. I could tell he was like, he wanted to throw up. That's a great story, though.
So, and this one was a Democrat.
Yeah, he switched over. He switched over back and forth.
But he was a tool.
Well, that sells that Donald Trump is an asshole for doing that.
He's open about not liking people with deformities and disabilities, and he proved it by saying, you know, to the photographer in North Korea at the summit, make sure that we all look thin and perfect.
Well, when you're fat and imperfect like he is, and trust me, I know because I am. I get it. But,
yeah, but at least you're handsome.
Well, there you go. Thank you. I was
and smart. You're not a tool.
He's smart. I trust me. I want to get off this subject because I.
I go 0 to 60.
I had a whole Camp Casey thing I was going around, but we'll study that for next time. Because I remember first time you were on our show. You were my first podcast guest.
That's right.
And we were all drunk on absinthe, and not a lot of that made
we
sense.
We did drink absinthe. I don't even know how you got real absinthe back then, because I don't think it was in the
U.S.
It was
just starting to become legal, but I did get it. This was imported. But anyway.
It was the real deal, because I was tripping.
Yeah, we were all tripping. But we had our favorite, Michael Vile, the magician, was on. So I had a personal sleight of hand with Bree Walker on the same show. Now,
all puns intended.
At that time, and also when Josie Cat was in the studio, you're talking about being in New York in the 70s and being a part of the punk scene. But last time I talked to you, last time we were hanging out, you told me you went to Studio 54.
Oh, yeah.
And we're hanging out with Andy Warhol and Mick Jagger.
Oh, yes, and Elton John.
Tell us about that.
It was very
Elton John
cool.
Too?
Because that was the era when they had the upstairs at Studio 54. And there was a lot of cocaine going around.
Of course.
So people were doing that upstairs where the couches were. Mm-hmm. And I was a DJ at a rock and roll station, an FM station that was very successful in New York City. And I was new to the scene, so I got invited places. And I ended up upstairs with the boys.
Nice.
It was, you know, we were just hanging out, and they were respectful. And
were you all at the same table, just you and Andy Warhol?
We were all just walking around talking to each other, drinking champagne and doing whatever else was offered, pretty much.
Yeah. So, yeah. How was Andy Warhol to party with?
Fentanyl, yeah.
Like, was his wig that bad in person? Was it?
he was charming, but in a very awkward way. He had an awkward body language to him, like a little boy in a way who didn't feel comfortable in a room of his peers. Even he struck me as kind of a sad, tragic character. Mm-hmm. Brilliant, as so many brilliant people are, sad and tragic.
Elton John probably felt very comfortable.
You know, he was gregarious.
I'm sure.
Yeah. Very much so. Very, very kind, I thought. I mean, he was very much a gentleman. And Mick Jagger was an ultimate gentleman.
Yeah. Seems like you and Mick Jagger crossed paths quite a few times.
More than twice. he wouldn't have remembered, but certainly I did.
I would be surprised.
I had a chance to interview him when I was in my first FM rock and roll DJ job in Kansas City.
And were you a Stones fan?
Oh, I was big Stone. Who isn't?
Right?
Yeah.
My mother doesn't like them. She's a Beatles. She loves the Beatles.
There was a time when you either, you know, you took this aisle or that aisle, the Beatles aisle or the Stones aisle. I was a Stones girl because I was into motorcycles and leather jackets.
No, I'm a Stones guy. I don't like the Beatles. Yeah. I'm the one person that doesn't like them in the world.
I don't like them.
Okay, it's the two of us, but...
Oh, I certainly love them. But I was Stones, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I Bob Dylan, the Stones, you know. Highway 61 Revisited era.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I was all about find me a motorcycle, a leather jacket, and a hot guy, and I'm on the back.
That's the way you think.
Uh-huh.
Well, speaking of hot guys, now, let me ask you something, because I need to know this because as Hannah knows, I lost my mojo at some point a while ago. When Mick Jagger walks in, he just has that charisma, that sexiness, because physically he's a weird-looking guy.
A, I can't imagine you ever losing your mojo. But B, physically, wiry, you know,
all lips
active, all active twitch and lips, yeah.
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 So how I mean, he must have I was
tongue-tied, of course, when he walked into the FM studio. He had to walk past the AM studio, which was where Rush Limbaugh was broadcasting as a top 40 DJ. So this is going back some years, you know.
And this is when the Stones were on the top 40.
And then, yes, and we had the FM station that I worked for, which was the FM side of the AM station that Rush Limbaugh was being a DJ on. His father owned the radio station, WDAF. And
so he didn't earn it like you did.
Well, I think that he was certainly given that job by Daddy.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So he went far with it. But, Mick was great. Walked in. Our FM station was sponsoring the Stones at Arrowhead Stadium in Kansas City. So Jagger came in with his entourage. And literally, this was like a closet in the cornfield in Overland Park, Kansas. Like a Nowheresville, and there's Mick Jagger, and I can't believe it because it was a surprise to me. He didn't, you know, let anybody know that he was going to show up at the FM station that was sponsoring the concert at Arrowhead Stadium. So he sat down, and for an hour and a half, he basically did the interview because I was tongue-tied. I mean, this was one of my first jobs ever in radio. It was the first official radio station. I'd worked in college radio before, you know, and been a DJ.
Let me tell you about Keith Darling, you know.
Oh, my gosh. And then I was like, I did ask a few questions, but he pretty much did the interview for me. He could tell, you know. I was young. I was 24.
Yeah.
And
it was like my first show when you basically drunkenly did the interview for me.
You did a great job.
I'm better now, obviously.
We had fun.
We did have fun. That was a fun.
It was like taming lions, yes. There were a lot of them in the room. So a lot of hair. And he also pulled, this is when we, you know, actually had albums, record albums, vinyl. He pulled the vinyl and played it. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
He chose the Stone songs that
played Rolling Stones. Okay.
Yeah. Well, I was your rock lady of the night.
I'm still trying to picture Rush Limbaugh as a top 40 DJ. We're number 35, REO Speedwagon. I can't.
That's about right.
Oh, boy. That's
and of course, when he saw Mick Jagger walking by, and he was in the great big studio. Had the big glass. As I say, I was in a closet with an FM transmitter in the cornfield. And
Nothing like the Ruby Studios here.
No, not at all. Like this is big
this
digs.
Is great, yeah.
This is the stardom. I like it. I like the stardom.
And, I love the studio.
It was so fun to watch Rush Limbaugh practically trip over himself, running to the door of his studio, and he's saying, Mick, can you come interview? And Mick flipped in the bird and walked on by into the little closet that was my FM studio. I loved that part. I love that story.
Awesome. Now, speaking of hashtag me too, did Rush Limbaugh ever hit on you?
No. He called me the long-haired, pot-smoking hippie chick who rides a motorcycle.
Sounds hot to me.
Sounds, yeah, like that.
He probably thought it was
a long-haired hippie chick and I ride a motorcycle.
That's right. Anyway, pot-smoking.
Speaking of sexy guys. Now, since this diagnosis, now you always did well with the women. You've had some beautiful girlfriends over the years.
Yeah,
I'm especially thinking of that one goth chick that you went out with a couple of years ago.
Oh yeah,
yeah. But you've always done well with the ladies.
Yeah, did okay.
But since you shed your long hair, your goatee, your Jesus locks,
it's not by choice, but yes,
apparently.
Apparently,
you're on the upswing.
Yeah, it's a strange cancer card that people use. You know, even people have, you know, got cancer, use the card kind of thing. It's kind of like, weirdly enough, is that like at the hospital, there's two female security guards have seen me since the get-go, since the first day I walked in there. I was like really in bad shape. And last on Monday, when I was in there getting my pick line changed, both ladies, very, very attractive ladies, security guards, they were like, oh, you look good. And then I was like, good as in what? Like, what is it? You want to hook up with me, or you want to? Is it good as in health? It's just, and then I realized that there's a lot of people like checking me out now, and it's kind of like
you're seeing girls checking you out that weren't checking out before.
They weren't checking me out before, and then
you have a nicely shaped head.
Thank you. I really, no, but I.
What a compliment!
It's you're not the first. I mean, everyone is like there's guys it's that noticeable. Are jealous of me with this. Like, you got a good head. And like. Okay, like I'm happy for that, I guess.
Because I was thinking of shaving my head to support you.
Yeah.
Is that something you would you even give a crap about?
I don't know.
Has anybody offered to do that?
No one's offered me to do that right now. No one said anything. I'll shave their head just in support. I did it because I first buzzed my head in the very beginning, right before I was going to have chemo, because I was like, I know this isn't happening. I don't want
to. You didn't want to come on patches.
Of hair. Yeah. And then. As I had just like a normal buzzed head for a few weeks, I started to see it fall out, like the little strands. And I'm like, oh, this is not good. This needs all go away. So I started to, you know, just shave my entire head. And then apparently I look good. So apparently people like it. So, I mean, I guess I look like I'm.
You look healthy.
I look healthy. Yes, I look younger, apparently. Yes. That's what people said. So before, the long hair, I just looked like I'm just like old and grizzled. And now I just have this like fountain of youth for some reason for shaving my head. But yeah, there's a lot of people like, you know, checking me out, looking at me, you know. And I'm
checking out Hannah right now. She's
I'm listening.
Look at it.
I'll
take
it.
You're protesting way too much.
Hannah's hot.
Great.
So Hannah's very hot, but...
But yeah, and it's just kind of weird. I mean, like I've kind of gotten used to it now, so it's given me like at least about 2 weeks to get used to this.
Because it was funny because before when you had the short hair,
yeah,
you used to tell me that people thought you looked like Randy Travis, which I don't get.
Yeah, I got Randy Travis a lot.
I see it.
And then Swayze.
Don Swayze,
not Patrick Swayze.
I tricked a band at a bar in the Valley. That they all thought I was Don Swayze because I said I'm Don Swayze, and they're like, no, you're not. I'm like, go on your phones. And they're like, oh my god, it's like about three or four years ago. Yeah, they buy me rounds of drinks.
That's excellent.
They actually thought I was Don Swayze because Swayze has that hair, so my hair wasn't long at the time, so it's like right here, but I had a goatee growing, so I kind of was like pulling that Swayze
The hairline and the goatee are very Swayze.
Yeah. So, but my hair wasn't down to here. It wasn't like the Rob Zombie goth look or anything like that at the time. So I tricked a band at a bar to think that was Don Swayze for anything.
So when this is all over, you gonna keep the hair short?
We'll see with my hair.
Because you really like the long hair.
I like the long hair, and then I was told that when your hair comes back after chemo, it comes curly.
And maybe a different color,
A different color. I could be blonde. Who knows?
Oh, wow.
So
it could be
blonde
four.
Curls.
It's whatever.
Little Lord Fauntleroy.
Given, yeah. It sucks is that hair is coming out here. Hair is actually thinning here and down there, too. So it's everywhere.
But they do say it'll grow back.
It will grow back, yeah.
No, but women will tell you. They want you to trim it up down there.
Well, yeah, this is the best.
That's the one positive thing.
This is the best way to do it. Just take some chemo. Take 12 treatments of chemo, and you don't have to worry about shaving anything. Just let it fall out.
No nair down there.
Yeah.
No
waxing.
No waxing.
It's the manicuring.
Yeah, to make sure it falls out naturally. So that's...
Yes.
But I'm becoming like... It's a weird like Benjamin Button for me, I guess. So I feel
that's
like
right.
I'm like just getting younger in some weird way. I mean, the inside, I don't. So that's like the Benjamin Button part, I guess.
That's
like,
one of my favorite
I'm just like
movies.
An old person inside, but I'm feeling younger outside. Because I'm moisturizing, too, a lot. I got nothing to do all day. I just
except moisturize?
Except get better.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I just want to get my skin healthy.
Yeah. Okay.
That's good.
Yeah.
Arnica, too, is good.
I'm sorry?
Arnica.
Arnica's good, too?
Yeah.
Okay. I'll give that a shot.
So vitamin C and pineapple.
Doing that. Well, drinking vitamin C.
Yeah.
So any pineapple.
So the thing is, if I shave my head, I would have to keep, like, the facial hair. Is that cheating?
You look like an evil villain if that would be.
So is that cheating, though?
Huh?
Is that cheating? If I should do this in sympathy of you, do I have
you,
to
no,
shave
No, you have to shave your head. I mean, not this. I had to take this off because it's falling out. But
okay.
I mean, that's
Hannah's saying it's cheating.
No, I have clippers. I'll do it for you, Mike. Girlfriend, I just did it for her, and we donated her hair to Locks of Love, and
that's a beautiful
she did it for
thing.
Her sister, and her sister's doing well.
All right,
and
well,
she's
maybe I'll donate my hair to Locks of Love.
Okay.
Well, it has
not
to
a
be
lot of locks.
Certain length.
Yeah,
it has to be a certain length.
Yeah.
It has to be virgin.
But I will tell you what else I'm doing.
It has to be virgin.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, none of us would qualify.
Yes,
that's true.
I'll tell you what else I'm doing, regardless of whether I'm shaving my head or not, is when I get home tonight, after I Venmo Lindsay for being the engineer tonight.
Thank you, Lindsay.
I'm going to be donating $100 to Ryan Tamo's GoFundMe.
Yay!
And I encourage everybody who's listening to at least do the same, or not even. You don't have to give what you can.
Yeah.
Go to Google. Go Ryan Tamo. GoFundMe Ryan Talmo. Now, I didn't do that for so you would say, oh, I meant to do it. It's been just financial strain. I'm doing it. I'm happy to do it.
Thank you.
But the thing is now, has GoFundMe changed? Because the goal is 20,000.
Yeah.
Right now you're at nine, approaching 10.
Approaching 10, yeah.
Now how long is the fundraising?
That thing's gonna be up probably till the treatments are over. So.
Okay, so it's not like you have to have a month to hit the goal. If you don't hit the goal, nothing.
No, yeah.
It's like Indiegogo, whatever you raise, you keep.
Yeah.
Okay, so I encourage everybody to donate. Donate $10, donate $20, whatever.
Every dime counts.
Or if you're a big baller like Donald Trump.
Pay all my bills.
Donald Trump, if you pay off the rest of this $20,000, I will go on there and say you are not an asshole.
Very good.
I will forgive you for sliding Bree Walker. And
I will too. I'll even give you a hand job.
And Bree Walker will give you a hand job.
Well, I don't think I will. Say.
You
know what? Fuck it. I'll give you a hand job, Donald Trump. If you pay off, or whoever, if somebody pays off Ryan Tamo and the other $10,000, I will give them a hand job.
Wow.
Or if
somebody pays him off like tomorrow.
That's for sure.
Yes. Now,
all right.
Ryan is blushing. It's great.
Well, if it's 10,000.
There's more exciting news. That's exciting. All the hand jobs that we're giving out. That is very exciting.
Left and right now.
Yes, and whatever for the women, whatever we got to do. Nobody wants me to do anything to them. But Bree Walker's coming back. It's been a long time. You're coming back on the air, and you're going to have your own podcast.
Yes,
is that right?
Indeed.
Or is it a radio show, a podcast?
Yes,
what's
absolutely.
You're back in San Diego.
We're going to broadcast out of. A radio station down there, but do a podcast and a radio broadcast too.
Nice.
That we hope will be launching in August, perhaps September. I've had some issues with I've had to have some eye surgery,
right?
Astigmatism and cataracts. Getting old's a bitch.
I was so looking forward to you with the eye patch.
Oh, I just took the eye patch off. To do the show. No, I was actually wearing it until yesterday, and then my eye doctor said I should take it off and start exposing my eye to the light so I can get used to it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then I had my own issues with recovery. I'm just another senior in recovery.
Well documented. We don't need to go through it over here.
Pardon?
Well documented. We don't have to go over it again.
No, it's well documented. That's right. Yeah, thank you, Harvey Levin.
It so sucks that if you Google Bree Walker...
Yeah.
Unlike all, if you Google Bree Walker, just read the articles. Don't look at the pictures.
Yeah.
Because half the pictures are.
Mine's not the worst mugshot out there, though.
Well, I hate how people judge
celebrities. It's not James Brown. It's not Nick Nolte.
No, Nick Nolte takes the cake of the best.
You got to love him for that.
Because Mel Gibson looked like he was just having a good time at the beach.
Did you see Vince Vaughn's?
Huh?
See Vince Vaughn's?
Vaughn's? Mel Gibson?
He just did he just had DWI smiling. He's like,
right by my house, too. Yeah. And I kind of did a little ha-ha because he gave me shit about being drunk in a restaurant about 2 years ago.
Wait a second. You have a Vince Vaughn story and you haven't told it on air?
It's embarrassing.
Please.
Oh, no, nothing's embarrassing
here. Please tell
us
and we'll talk about Bree's show.
So
this is the Dark Mark show.
I think we were at the Rainbow and then we decided to go back home.
What a surprise.
And we went to the Kettle of Manhattan Beach and we're hammered and we're texting at the table waiting for our food. And walks Vince Vaughn with one of his little friends. Comes over to the table. He's like, excuse me, ladies. Think you guys should get off your phone and talk to each other. And we're smashed. We're like, we're texting boys. Leave us alone. And our food comes. And I remember at one point I look up and he's facing me like this, just staring at me, eating my burger, super drunk. Kind of just shaking his head at me.
God.
He's like 6'4", right?
He's huge.
He's a tall dude. Yeah. He's stocky.
So his little friend. Everybody's his little friend.
But I have not been able to watch a movie without shame.
Why? He was hitting on you.
I can't, like, look at the screen.
We can't afford shame in the 21st century. Vince, I have a theory about
that. You got hit on by a celebrity.
He wasn't hitting on me. He was shaming me for being drunk.
No, that's a move. That's a
move. He has no room to talk. None of us does.
He's married to a beautiful woman.
I'm sure he is.
Vince Vaughn's married again?
Yeah. He just had a DUI, so he's doesn't sound like it's the most stable marriage.
I don't think you can draw a parallel.
He was out having fun. He didn't make the best decision. He's under the spotlight.
How many marriages have we had?
There we go. See,
one.
I've only been married 3 times.
And how many DUIs?
One.
Hey, okay. We've never been married, so.
Right.
You and Vince Vaughn.
Hmm?
You and Vince Vaughn.
Me, Vince Vaughn. Yeah, I'm married once.
Oh, well, okay. I've had a wet reckless too. Okay, right. So
a lot of people are just like, "There's something wrong with you if you're not married at a certain age."
Yeah. I'm not married.
Yeah,
it goes both ways, I guess.
Well, you were married at that age. The three of us weren't. Yeah. And
you know, and the thing about it, these days, you can't have anything private, so we can't afford shame. It's more important that we talk about our mistakes. I've learned from my mistakes. I continue to learn from my mistakes. I'm working hard on my recovery. I'm trying to be proud of myself. I'm trying to like myself. It's very hard to like yourself after you have a DUI. It's very hard to like yourself, you know, after you've had a run-in with the law. And these days, it's almost impossible to not have a run-in with the law because there are a lot of law out there, you know. And also, we live in an age when everything online sort of glorifies bad behavior. But the truth is, when you have something like a DUI, you know damn straight you really fucked up, and you potentially could have killed someone else, hurt someone else. Way harder to live with that than hurting yourself.
Yeah.
But if you hurt yourself or kill yourself and you have kids like I do, I mean, I horrify myself when I think about it. But what I have to try to do, and that's why I think it's important that we can talk about this stuff, and when I do the podcast, and thank you very much, Mark, for mentioning that. Haven't even named it yet, but my partner, Joe Vecchio, has been doing radio and TV in San Diego since day one of me working at Channel 10, and he worked at Channel 10 the same time. So we've stayed, you know, partners in crime all these years as broadcasters, and decided that we would hook up talking about, you know, having a podcast together that would deal with resilience.
Awesome.
Which is why I bring that word up a lot, because I think that I have impatience a lot more than I have resilience. But if I can have forgiveness for myself, then I can grow my compassion muscle for others much more.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's so easy these days in the digital era to make fun of other people, to be cruel, you know, and in a faceless way, and a shameless way. And we should be ashamed of being cruel, not of being human. Mm-hmm. And from, you know, from where I sit, learning from my mistakes is all I really have left to prove in my life, because I'm of a ripe age now. And I think all of my...
29's a bitch.
my misdeeds should be behind me, right?
But this is not going to be a political show. This is going to be a show for everybody.
Yeah, this is going to be a show for everybody. We're going to tell stories of resilience, stories like Ryan's, stories. We all have stories of resilience. I mean,
maybe Ryan will be a guest.
Yeah, I'd love that.
Come down.
Oh, I'd love that. Yeah, because you're a San Diego guy.
I've actually got the name now of the president. I think the president or general manager, Ed Quinn.
Oh, yeah. Sure, Ed.
Yeah, that's my sister's godfather.
Yeah, is he still the dude there?
No, it's somebody else, I think. So that's my dad finally texted me.
Yeah, Ed was the general manager when I was offered the gig in New York and left Channel 10 in San Diego. And Ed Quinn, he wished me luck, but he didn't want me to leave.
Yeah.
he kind of made me feel like I was betraying Channel 10. And I always, you know, wonder what would it have been like if I'd stayed there all those years and been comfortable in my skin all those years. And I'm sure I would have loved it, every minute of it.
Mm-hmm.
I hated leaving San Diego, but it was an opportunity. And I'm a restless soul. And I, to this day, you know, I have to admit who I am. a restless soul. I mean, I grew up in Austin, Minnesota, where there was nothing but a meatpacking plant, the Hormel meatpacking plant. Mm-hmm. So the perfume of my youth is pickled pig's feet.
Nice.
The smell of pickled pig's feet is the perfume of my youth. They make Spam at Hormel meatpacking plant. And, you know, that's it. Spam, pretty much.
Well,
So it's humble beginnings
you've gone
and a
restless
soul.
The world, and you're coming back to San Diego to do radio.
Yeah.
And it's not going to be one of these partisan politics. It's about
humans. It's not going to be politics.
It's going to be not negativity, uplifting.
Uplifting. It's about how do we survive?
Because you met my father as a conservative, and you guys got along great.
We got along great. Your dad is a good dude and a smart one.
Yes.
I see where you get your smarts, because your mom and dad both are highly intelligent people with very differing viewpoints.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But I loved watching their their cooperative challenging style of conversation.
You saw that, huh?
Yeah.
So this is going to be enough of this yelling at each other. This is going to be stories of uplift. We're going to laugh. We're going to cry. At the end of the day, we're going to feel better about ourselves and better about the world.
That is exactly the goal, and it is as yet not officially named, but we know that the theme is about how do we stay resilient and compassionate as human beings in an era when so many of us feel alone and scared, probably because we're buried in our text messaging and trying to compare ourselves with everybody else online.
I look forward to the Untitled Bree Walker podcast. Speaking of this podcast, where does the time go? It's been an hour, but I have to say, before we go, and I'm not, you know me, we have people spanking each other and doing weird stuff and setting each other on fire and doing magic.
It's true.
I have to say, I'm in the studio with three people I very much admire. Bree Walker, because obviously your story is one of triumph. Your story is one of somebody, as Hannah was saying in her text, somebody that looks different than everybody else, but shows everybody how beautiful that is.
Thank you, Hannah.
Which
that meant
really
a lot to me.
Bruce really connects with me, and I'll tell you off air what I struggle with.
Hannah has had her struggles, but I definitely admire her.
You're brilliant.
She's beautiful, and I'm glad that she's there every week.
Thank you for having me.
Yes,
nice.
I want to hear more stories of celebrities hitting on you, and this guy right here, did I hurt you?
No, you're fine.
Oh, okay.
No, it'll be right here.
Okay. Yeah, I was a little over anxious, but
no, you're fine.
Like I say, for the first time I met you, you know, anytime that I'm in a room that you're in, I know I'm gonna have a good time.
Oh.
And I know that I know people are gonna behave themselves, and I know that people are gonna be, if we follow your lead, and your lead is always decency, support, and inspiration.
Yeah.
And it's always been like that. And
appreciate that.
Trust me, it's not surprising to me that you're not only beating the odds, but way ahead of schedule with your recovery.
Yeah.
And that's going to stay that way. And like I say, I'm going to be giving $100 tomorrow, and I challenge everybody to help. Go to GoFundMe, Ryan Talmo, click on and give what you can. Bree?
That's a given. You got me in, boy.
Oh, right. Thank you.
Yeah, you do.
Thank you.
And Bree, not a big social media presence, but I think that's going to change on the podcast.
Yes, it will have to. I'll be forced to do that.
Before the launch, we will have you back here at the Ruby.
Oh, yeah.
Trust me, I would love to be here every week. I tried to get a show with the two of us when I got back to town. That didn't work out. But
well, as you know, both of my kids very much want me to go back to what I love to do, and that is blabbing.
Yes.
And they say that's where my light shines the best is when I'm blabbing.
You're good at that. But you're B Walker Lampley on Facebook. You're some unknown number on Twitter.
Yeah, you know, I'm Bree Walker Lampley, iCloud, et cetera. I'm Bree Walker 2263 @gmail.com. That's my public email and my personal email. You know, and I do my best answering everybody's conversations. That was one thing that was a point of pride for me when kids with differences, physical or emotional or any differences, would write to me. It was always a very big deal, and I saved every single letter that I ever got, and I got letters from all over the world when I was on TV.
And I might have to take you to Ryan's show. He's doing a storytelling show. To.
Yeah.
Oh, Busted. Oh yeah, on at the Storyteller's Bookstore.
And when is that?
That's next Sunday.
I might have to take you to that.
Great.
That's on a good week for me. So I've been booked on a lot of shows, but it's been really difficult with the chemo to make it to a lot of these shows.
You get tired, right?
I get tired, or it's just like my brain's just not all there. This will be a very interesting one. So I'm going to switch gears, and it's called Busted. It's usually about how to get around in L.A. without a car. Mm-hmm. And so I don't drive anymore right now, so I take the metro. Mm-hmm. Can't take the metro right now. It's a cesspool of diseases. And I can't really my immune system's not 110%, right. So I can pick up the cold.
I hadn't thought of that.
It could be deadly for me. Right. So
if you want to ride to the show, I'll give you a ride to the show.
Yeah.
Hopefully bring a car, maybe handle it.
Yeah, and if my car gets repaired, I'll be happy to drive you around, too.
Ryan Tom on all social media. I think it's Valley Jesus on Instagram and Twitter.
I don't do Twitter right now. Okay, I'm not really playing with
Twitter. Valley Jesus on Instagram, Ryan Tomo on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
And please go to GoFundMe, Ryan Tomo. Google it. I don't know the URL, but just Google Ryan Tomo, T-A-L-M-O.
Google my name. GoFundMe. Yeah.
And give what you can. And Hannah?
Hail HannahBox666, B-A-K-K on Instagram. And I will post the link to your GoFundMe account.
Okay.
So
appreciate that.
Go ahead, check out our Instagram so you can find it there.
Well, I think we better stop before Hannah starts crying. Anyway, have a wonderfully creepy week. Bye.
Bye-bye.